What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to the stream of consciousness that is the .NET All Access Podcast TNA Impact Wrestling Audio Review. I am your regular host, Will Pruitt, returning after a week of being gone. Thank you last week to Jason Powell for filling in while I was working. Weird, right? Sometimes I actually do things like that. But yeah, thanks to Jason for filling in. Also, thank you to Chris Shore, who filled in for me on some .NET members audio, the .NET countdown show that I do with Jake Barnett on Wednesday while I was also working. So, yeah, I've been off for a week from .NET audio. So, yep, I'm back, yo. This is happening. And speaking of this happening, another thing that is happening in the broad sense is the .NET membership site. If you are not a ProWrestling.net member, I would strongly encourage you to check it out. One big reason is .NET members audio. You get a show almost every day of the week, sometimes every day of the week. It depends on schedules and everything. But every week you're going to get a Raw review, an Impact review, and a SmackDown review. You're going to get the .NET countdown show that is usually myself and Jake Barnett counting down the top five and bottom three moments of the week. You're going to get a .NET Q&A with Jason Powell answering member questions, and oftentimes, if you have a question that you want him to ask one of his sources, he will go out of his way to do that for you, so that's pretty fantastic. And you get the flagship, .NET Weekly. This is Jason Powell and Chris Shore breaking down the all of the news and events of the week, offering analysis, and oftentimes breaking first-run news that you're not going to get anywhere else. It doesn't show up in print. None of that. It just shows up on the .NET Weekly audio. So, with that, you also get member interviews from time to time with Jason. Recently, he's conducted interviews with Sean Devari, Shane Hurricane Helms. There's interviews with a couple former Tough Enough contestants. There are interviews with Dragon Gate USA booker Gabe Spolsky. You've got another Dragon Gate guy whose name, Larry Dallas, that's the one. Larry Dallas did a really great interview with Jason. Former WWE creative team members Chris Roach and Chris DeJoseph. Just a ton of member exclusive interviews along with all of the other audio you're going to get. So check that out. If you're interested, if I just sold you on that ish. Also, the ad-free version of the site, the ability to write your own blogs on the .NET members forum and access to the .NET members forum. If I just, if your ears perked up with all of that and you're thinking about it, head on over to ProWrestling.net. Membership starts at $5.50 a month if you take the annual option and you just want to dive in. Or if you just want to try it out for a month, see if it's for you, $7.50 for that month. And we're pretty sure you're going to like what you get. You're going to enjoy the product. Again, ProWrestling.net. There's a membership link on the right-hand side of the page, and it is well worth it. We're here to talk about Impact, aren't we? That's what's happening. TNA Impact. That's going down. If you want to follow along with me as I talk about the show, check out Jason Powell's live coverage on the site. He covered the show last night. I will be talking about it and probably stealing some of his jokes. Let's talk about where we were last week. Previously on Impact, if you will. By the way, I know I say it a lot. I like the Previously on Impact gig. It is fun. This one talked about Bully Ray and Joseph Park and also featured a little bit of Crackhead Claire. And I'm pretty sure every time that original Crackhead Claire angle is replayed, an angel gets its wings forcibly torn off. That's the only way I can explain it. I don't know why TNA keeps going back to that original thing. I know it was a big reveal for them, but it also came off so poorly that you'd think they'd want to do something else. So, we opened the show. Mike Tanay and Taz are introduced. They're hyping Destination X this Sunday, and they're hyping James Storm versus Jeff Hardy as the main event of this show. Bully Ray came out, said he had a big, big, huge announcement, and announced that he is now on Twitter. That's right, Twitter. And you can follow him at RealBully5150. He sent his first tweet in the ring, and this was a fun announcement from Bully Ray. I liked this just because it's such a Bully Ray thing to do. It seems so outright. Best word I can think of for it, douchey. Like, it just seems so douchey. I'm going to come out to the ring to announce that I've got a Twitter account now. Yep, that's Bully Ray. But we had Joseph Park come and join him after this. And Joseph Park is super duper over in the Impact Zone. It's weird. Like, I don't expect Joseph Park to be this great act or to get these chants and everything. And a lot of it has to do with how great of a heel Bully Ray is, but Joseph Park is holding his own in the over department. And it's rather remarkable. So kudos to Jay Park on that one. He mentioned beating Bully Ray at Slammiversary. He said, you know, he stood his ground, all of that. And Park said he's going to beat Ray next week. And then Ray said, you're a lawyer, right? Well, anything goes. And he talked about, you know, how it's just like the match at Slammiversary. And then Bully Ray pulled out a piece of paper and said, this is a restraining order against your brother, Abyss. That is interesting. That is really interesting. It creates a good hook going into the next show. It does. It creates a hook going into next week's Ray versus Park match where you go, so who wins that? Because you've got Joseph Park, who's needed Abyss's help and all that, and it's been fun. And you've got Bully Ray, who should be able to beat up Joseph Park easily. I'm really interested to see how this match goes at this point. I wasn't too psyched about it. I think Park is starting to jump the shark just a little bit. But now with Ray coming in with the restraining order thing, it creates that extra little wrinkle that I think is going to lead to some ratings on this one. Yeah, then we went to a backstage segment. Hulk Hogan and Austin Aries are talking, and Hogan tells Aries, hey, I need you to hand over that belt tonight. And Aries goes, I was going to on Sunday. What do you mean? And Hogan says, he needs it tonight. And Aries said, okay, by the end of the show, I'll give the belt to you. I like Hogan and Austin Aries as a duo. I think they've got some fun chemistry. Maybe it's just the fact that both men have such massive egos that when they're on screen together, I don't know. There's something fun between them that I think is worth TNA going out of their way to do a little more Aries and Hogan segment after this. And Hogan basically said, you know, we need you. We're taking this thing to the next level, brother. Hogan's idea of the next level is it's a little amorphous. It's constantly changing and evolving, much like Hogan himself, apparently. So we went to commercial after that. Then we got Daniels saying that AJ has sired a crack baby. Crack baby! That's basically it. The replay of that. Then Dixie Carter was shown backstage sitting with Al Snow, Bruce Pritchard, and D'Lo Brown. And basically she's like, I haven't talked to AJ Styles or Claire Lynch all week. You know, you were sitting next to Claire last week. You could have, you know, stopped yelling like you think things are real and sat down and been like, so Claire, did you do it with AJ Styles? And then when she said no, you would have gotten over it. I feel bad for Surge in all of this, because I think Dixie, if anything, has shown that she's a really poor communicator with her loved ones. I mean, you look at the situation with Dixie and AJ and Surge, and she could have said, hey, Surge, that phone call, it was about a surprise party we were going to have. You don't need to punch AJ. We're chill. Then she also could have gone to Surge and been like, hey, there's this girl, we're helping her out. I'd rather not tell you who she is, but AJ and I, we're helping her out. That's all that's going on. And then she could have gone to AJ and Claire at the same time, probably last week, and been like, hey, so what happened? Just be honest with me, did anything ever happen between you? They say no, then she goes, Daniels is a bastard. But instead, Dixie Carter just doesn't talk to anyone all week. I don't know. Sounds to me like someone has some communication issues in TNA, and it sounds like Dixie Carter. Yeah. So, it's just silly. It really is silly that Dixie is doing this. Like, the writing of this angle, And here's the issue. Soap opera angles are chill. Who's the father? All that stuff. I mean, if they bring Maury Povich in for the reveal, I will buy the pay-per-view that Maury is on. But the problem is that this is a soap opera angle with so many plot holes and so much stupidity. I just don't know how to react to it. I think one of the issues with doing soap opera-style storylines on a weekly show is that it requires the suspension of disbelief that nothing happens, that these characters can't talk to each other from the end of show on Thursday, basically Thursday at 10, to the next Thursday at 8. We're supposed to believe that these people cannot talk to each other unless it's on Impact Wrestling. That's what this show is trying to lead us to believe. And that's just weird to me. That's the issue with soap opera storylines on a weekly show. They can't communicate during the week, and it doesn't make sense. Next up, we had D-Von versus Crimson for the TV title. They made some excuse about getting the Bound for Glory series established, and now that it is, we're back to the weekly TV title defense. Kudos to them for remembering the TV title thing, and mentioned not just saying, well, it's a weekly defense, like they've always had it, but actually mentioning, hey, we ignored this for a little while, we're getting back to it. TNA is doing a lot of detail work in their storylines right now, and I think we saw it last week with Claire, how it felt like most of that show was actually trying to just convince us that Claire, to tell us what's going on with Claire in a good way, and to convince us that that story is not going to be full-out awful, even though it is. It just feels like TNA is showing a lot of respect for their audience by giving us detailed storylines, by trying to fix their mistakes. Someone on TNA's creative team is sitting there going, this doesn't make sense, or, you know, we messed up here, let's mention it here so people notice it. And I think part of it is almost trying to be better than WWE. I think that a lot of their motivation for it probably comes from the fact that Vince McMahon has famously said, well, if I don't remember it, or infamously said, I guess, if I don't remember it, the audience doesn't. And that's just not true. When you're producing a product like this, idiots like me are going to think about it more than once a week. And even if it's not just people like me, wrestling fans have memories. I have a good memory, and I don't obsess over wrestling the way I probably come off like I do. I just remember things. Fans watching the TV show remember things. But yeah, I had mentioned, I think in a Slammiversary audio for the .NET members with Jason Powell, that I could see Crimson being TV champion. So I saw him come out for this match with D-Von, and I knew it wouldn't happen, but I kind of hoped it would. But this one ended, you know, Crimson was trying to hit some quick pins, and I think they're going with Crimson losing confidence as the story. And, D-Von hit him with the Spine Buster 1-2-3-sies, and that was the match. It was all right. After the match, we had Madison Rayne come out. Madison Rayne, who's had a crush. And she was looking at the ring, and D-Von and Earl Hebner were there. So just like the good old-fashioned Russo swerve with the steel chair where you look at one person and hit the other, this was the good old-fashioned, you know, Russo-style swerve with the kiss where you look at one person and you kiss another. And Madison Rayne apparently has a crush on Earl Hebner. I'm so tired. They haven't done it in a couple years, but it used to be like every Knockouts match featured someone making out with Earl Hebner. I don't want to see Earl Hebner get made out with. It's gross. He's gross. You know, I know that the Hebner family doesn't like me too much, and I'm just glad I never supported them by buying a t-shirt out of a trunk. But Earl, you know, maybe a Velvet Sky's after that lucrative, or Madison Rayne is after that lucrative t-shirt money. Like, she heard about how much he was making off of those trunk t-shirts and really wants to get her some of that. Maybe, you know, the "You're Damn Right I Did" shirt I hear is a hot seller for people who want to exploit the Montreal Screwjob, even though Earl Hebner famously cried about it. Douche. But yeah, Earl Hebner got made out with. I don't really care. Stupid story. I hope it doesn't end the same way that Don Marie and Al Wilson ended back in the day. We had a shot of Chris Sabin walking with crutches, and Tanae said Sabin would be out next to discuss his future. We came back, Sabin was climbing into the ring, and he basically, you know, he made it sound like he was going to retire, was saying, you know, my family asked me, sat me down and said, how long are you going to keep doing this after, you know, this injury? And he said it got worse because then his doctor sat him down and said, how long are you going to keep doing this with this injury, man? So, finally, you know, he made it seem like he was going to retire. Then Bobby Roode came out and said, oh, yeah, I know you. And this was cool. They played off of the Roode and Saban history with the Beer Money Machine Guns feud that I think is a little bit overrated because their best of five series, which was a bunch of gimmick matches that made the gimmick matches not matter and made their best of five series not matter. But I'm kind of a jerk. So, but Roode, he was a huge jerk to Saban. You know, Roode just came off as unlikable and talked about how, you know, the whole X Division is awful and all of that stuff. And then kicked Saban in the leg. Classic. You know, took out his leg and started hitting him, beating him down. And Austin Aries ran in for the save and ran Roode off. Good stuff. Nice to heat things up between, between Aries and Roode, while also getting Saban involved and using Saban's injury in a good way. And, you know, building some sympathy on Saban. Saban comes back, you can show this footage, you've got a natural rivalry with Bobby Roode if you want it. You've got, you know, a return to the X Division triumphantly if you want it. There's a lot that you can do here with this program. Just great stuff from them. We went to commercial. After that, we had our first X Division, you know, Ultimate X, Destination X qualifying thing of the night. This was not a good match, folks. It was Dakota Darcell versus Flip Casanova. And something about the matches where I actually liked the X Division competition that we got on the last show. I am really disappointed in the exhibition competition that we got on this show. You had, first of all, Flip Casanova is the clumsiest wrestler ever. From the looks of it. He can do four backflips, but he's going to injure someone in the process. Like, it's the stupidest thing on earth. And it's, you know, it's the stereotype of an indie worker that is indie-rific. If I were TNA, honestly, I would have him get rolled up and beat in 3 seconds by someone. At Destination X, because I don't think you can trust this guy to go in the ring and not hurt someone. And, you know, the person that wins this match is going to put their body on the line enough in Ultimate X later in the night. You don't want to have Flip Casanova break their arm in the process. This was a terrible showing from him. I have no desire to ever see him wrestle again. First of all, he looked like a douche in his indie shorts. I'm sorry, indie wrestlers, shorts don't work. They don't. They make you look awful. The whole, like, long, short thing. I don't know why you do that. I don't know if, you know, that 2003 everyone wears Dickies work shorts thing just is stuck in the indie wrestling conscious. But I don't really think that, I don't really think that you need these guys, that you need to wear shorts. Anyways. Flip Casanova and Dakota Darso. Darso doesn't look like he's improved much from the last time he lost an X Division qualifying match. I don't know why he's still around. But there were a few big spots in this match. Just every time Flip hit Dakota with a move, it seemed like it hurt for realsies. And not in the good way, in the I'm low-key, you're paying me a bunch of money, I'm not going to job and I'm going to injure people way, is the way it looked. And yes, I don't really enjoy the in-ring stylings of Loki, if you couldn't tell. You can all go ahead and email me about it. Or email Chris Shore about it. Email Chris, damn it. Don't email me. Complain about me to Chris. That's what we need here. At one point, Darso, like, Casanova hit Darso with a kick to the face and a corkscrew moonsault off the middle rope to the floor. Again, you can barely throw a good kick. Why the hell are you doing a corkscrew moonsault? It's wrestling. It isn't gymnastics. I love high-flying wrestling as much as the next guy. If you want to see a really great high-flying match, don't look at this show. Look at, hey, I think we'll get some on Sunday at Destination X for sure-sies. But also, Dragon Gate USA recently put out a DVD of their, what show was it? Revolt. They had this match called the High Flyer Spray. That was some great, hard-hitting, high-flying spot-fest action. I loved it. Like, that was one of my favorite matches I think I've seen this year, and it was from an event last year. But it's one of my favorite matches I've seen in the last year. It was that good. But this, you know, I don't want a high-flying match that doesn't flow and is boring. Anyways, I think I've ranted about this enough. Darso looked bad, Flip looked bad, Flip won the match with a reverse flip leg drop thing that looked like it hurt Darso more than it should have hurt him. Yeah, this was bad. We saw a gut check recap with Taylor Hendricks, and I was happy that we got this on this show, because it gives me a chance to talk about the gut check from last week. Why does the match not matter at all in gut check? Why do they even have the match if they're going to do this? Like, it seems like the match is a technicality. Let's put them out there with an established star, get them squashed, but then we're going to talk about how much heart they showed and how much determination they've got, and by gum, did they cut a good promo. Guys, make it make sense all the way through. TNA is doing a really good job of making things make sense now, but the gut check is still something that doesn't make sense all the way through. And it's a major issue in that company. It's a major issue with what TNA is doing right now. And I'm sad to say that I don't think it's going to change. I don't think they're going to get better at this, but I really hope that they do. This gut check segment was that was disappointing. But they showed an interview with Taylor Hendricks, who was so excited and so happy. And she's already gotten more on-screen time than Alex Silva, the winner of the first gut check. Remember that? Alex Silva? A-Silv? That dude? Yeah. Then we got Madison Rayne and Gail Kim versus Tessmacher and Tara as our third match of the night. This was kind of a nothing match. Miss Tessmacher and Tara defeated Rayne and Kim in 3 minutes. It was, I guess it was supposed to build towards next week's knockout title match that was supposed to be this week, but it didn't really do that. So the match just seemed like nothing to me. Moving on, AJ Styles, who sired a crack baby, was shown walking backstage. Then we saw a video package on James Storm building up his match with Jeff Hardy. Something that you can learn from Impact, or something that was mentioned. Jeff Hardy actually does not pay James Storm's bills. To me, that makes Jeff Hardy a heel. I look at James Storm, and I want to start up a PayPal account or a donation thing to get James Storm's bills paid by Jeff Hardy. That's pretty important to me, personally. This was a really great package. The focus on Storm. And they did a really nice one for Hardy later in the show, too. Talking about the Bound for Glory series. Talking about how much it means to them and what this match will be in that series. This is how you make the Bound for Glory series feel special. This is how you make Hardy and Storm's match feel more important than Mr. Anderson versus Robbie E. This was fantastic. Then we had AJ Styles coming to the ring, and they showed the Christopher Daniels crack baby footage again. Crack baby! And AJ said basically, here we go again. Said Daniels' allegations were wrong, and, you know, how are you going to make this one stick? Daniels came out, and he and Kazarian walked out with the tag titles, and Kazarian said Styles gets junky whores pregnant. Crack whore! The crack whore is pregnant! Yeah, I write songs about this angle because it's so bad. I really find it to be terrible. So, junky whores get pregnant, yes. Said he tried to knock some sense into him. Styles said that when he gets his redneck hands on Kazarian, he's going to rip his head off. Daniel said he has proof. Styles cut him off and told him to shut his mouth. Said it's not about him and Claire or Dixie, it's about him and Daniels. Hell yeah! Then Styles talking about beating Daniels last year, and now it's Styles that wants the match, not Daniels, and they're going to do it again, and this time it's going to be last man standing, and he said that Daniels isn't a man, and he's going to prove it once and for all. Match number 1,422 of AJ Styles versus Christopher Daniels is going to happen on Sunday. I couldn't care less. I mean, Daniels has won, what, like a half a match in this series. It's really bad at this point. It is. You know, you had Daniels hanging out with the screwdriver, I think, around Bound for Glory. And, you know, this rivalry's just been going on for so long. Plus, last man standing matches are boring. I don't care who you are. I love a good hardcore match, but last man standing matches are freaking obnoxiously boring. So there's that. Backstage, Hulk Hogan was talking to a guy with a handheld camera. I think it was supposed to be like, Hulk is taping a segment for the Before the Bell thing. And he basically was like, this Aries and Rude thing, brother, it's next level on us. It's going next level on us, or something like that. I think the phrase next level was thrown around quite liberally with that. But, you know, that is Hulk Hogan's favorite phrase. Hulk Hogan's going next level on the phrase next level. That's meta next level. That's like the next level. The next level, if you want to be technical about it. When a guy walked in and handed him an envelope and said, yo, we're not cowering. We've got something for you, Hogan. Wait and see. Hogan opened the envelope, and it had a eight of clubs, ace of spades, ace of clubs, and an eight of spades with a message that read, see you next week. I've since, in my research, and by research I mean looking up things on the Google, found out that that's called the dead man's hand, I guess, in the poker. And, Hogan, so I guess that's the group, the eights and aces, I think they referred to them, or aces and eights or something, they referred to them later in the show. It's chill. You know, it's one of those, angle, you know, they're following up on the Lucha Nexus attack on Sting, which is cool, but it's coming just a little bit too late for me. In the last 2 weeks, I think they had more than enough opportunity to do that exact angle and say next week, just so you could get a little more hype into it. Next up, we had our Jeff Hardy video, which I already mentioned, I liked a lot. He talked about being inspired again. One of the funny things about Jeff Hardy, and I think it's one of the things that they discovered while he was a heel that made his heel character work really well, is the fact that Jeff Hardy comes off as just nonplussed, just whatevs about anything he does. That's me closing a sliding glass door in the background, by the way. Nothing but professional here at ProWrestling.net. Jeff Hardy just comes off like he doesn't give a crap about anything 9 times out of 10. He's just like, yeah, I'm going to go in there and, you know, I'm inspired again by this series, man. I am. And as a heel, I thought it was brilliant. Jeff Hardy's heel work, I think, is really underrated. And it's sad that during that period, Jeff himself was so messed up. Because, man, there is so much that could have been done with that character. I mean, oh, it's a disappointment that it was wasted. The Antichrist of professional wrestling thing was phenomenal. You know, again, it's a disappointment that Jeff Hardy messed that up. But he's like, I'm inspired again by this Bound for Glory series, you know? It's a series for Bound for Glory, and I'm inspired by it. Yeah. Jeff Hardy just doesn't care. Love it. Then we had our fourth match of the night, and this one, there's a lot of debate about online. It was Lars Only. Johnny Yuma from Pro Wrestling Guerrilla and NWA Hollywood and all that. He's big, you know, he's relatively big on the SoCal indie scene as part of the Rock Nest Monsters with his partner, Johnny Goodtime. Yes, they're both named Johnny. No, I can't tell them apart. They even look very different. And I knew this was Yuma because he tweeted about it. But, I have no idea which one really looks like which. And every time I see him, I'm like, Johnny, one of them, pinned the other guy. Yeah. So, it was him against Kenny King, Ring of Honor Tag Team Champion Kenny King. Ring of Honor was quick to put out a response to this online, and, you know, a lot of the controversy is coming from this. So, Kenny King, not under contract to Ring of Honor right now. Yes, he is a current tag team champion, but he is not actually under contract. He, at one point, agreed to a contract extension with ROH based on a certain set of terms, and, you know, his lawyer had to look over it. He was basically wrestling on a handshake agreement, and ROH thought, hey, that's chill. We got him on the handshake. We're good. You know, Vince McMahon thought that at one point about Lex Luger, too. Oh, Lex. Your lessons just keep, just keep popping up in wrestling. But, you know, so they thought they had him under contract-ish. And, you know, he agreed, I guess, according to Ring of Honor, Kenny King agreed with a handshake that he wouldn't wrestle for another televised organization, and he would just take, you know, but that he could take meetings while he was still waiting. So he took a meeting with, TNA. And I'm going to guess and say that meeting went pretty well. And that meeting turned into him wrestling a match on Impact. And he told Ring of Honor, and they said, hey, you're not allowed to do that. And he said, too bad, I'm going to. But, you know, and that's Ring of Honor's story. It's what they put out on their Bookface account and their website and stuff. Kenny King's side of the story may be completely different. And I think there's probably just a little bit more to it than that. But, you know, that's what happened. So, going into this, that's what went down. You know, give or take, some of the details are probably a little bit off in that story, but that's life. So, Kenny King versus Lars Only, again, Johnny Yuma. Johnny slash Lars came off, you know, the Rock Nest Monsters are a fun act. They're kind of a comedy tag team that occasionally gets serious. They're, if you watch Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, they're very much in that vein of, They're a comedy tag team that is aware that they are a comedy, and in the ring can get super serious when they need to. And that describes a whole lot of the PWG roster. I mean, even Kevin Steen is that way in PWG, where it's like, yeah, he'll get, you know, he's going to make jokes, and he's going to be on commentary earlier in the night and not get super intense, but then he gets into the ring and he's slapping folks around. But Lars just came off, staff member Jake Barnett said in the forum, he was the indiest indie worker who was ever indie. And that's how he came off. He was super indie. And again, one of the flaws of this Destination X concept, aside from the fact that they're basically all getting gut checked without the gut check segment, one of the flaws in this concept overall is the fact that you're bringing in these indie workers who aren't polished, who aren't used to this, and who aren't used to doing live TV or, you know, working live. So they're going to get nervous. They're going to get frightened. They're going to, you know, things are going to happen in the ring. And, you know, we saw it in the match with, you know, Flip, I'm going to injure everybody, Casanova and Dakota Darso, that it just, they come off as kind of clumsy. And I think that Lars, especially in this match, came off as kind of clumsy. And Yuma's a pretty decent worker. Watch his stuff from, you know, NWA Hollywood and PWG. He's good. But King, more importantly, came off like a star in this match. A, Kenny King is stacked for an X Division dude. Like, you look at him next to Lars Only, who doesn't look out of place as an X Division wrestler, and Kenny King is just huge. And then there were some weird things. There was this odd Russian leg sweep thing. Like, the match just came off the rails completely. You could tell they got lost. And then they went into the finishing sequence with a King hitting a back to the head and hitting a twisting backbreaker for the win on Only. You know, 5 minutes, 20 seconds, you probably could have cut it down to 4 and people would have been chill, TNA. And I'm the guy who goes, give us longer, more athletic matches, but I don't think you put unproven commodities out there to do that. So Kenny King won the match. And Chrissy Emmy came out to interview Kenny King. And King said he didn't come to play games. He's there to stand up and be noticed. He said, Hemi can't stop looking at him. People can't stop looking at him. And if people think that was something special, they ain't seen nothing yet. He said something like, I've got a lot riding on this. Kind of a veiled, like, yeah, I left Ring of Honor for this. You know, I left a okay paying gig at Ring of Honor. By the way, Ring of Honor, you know, that this is just a side note that I want to put out there. When you are when you have something like this happen, it sucks. You know, I can sympathize a little bit with ROH. You know, they thought they had the deal done. Hey, we're just waiting for him to sign the contract. Lawyers are checking it out. Cool. They put the tag titles on King. A lot of people are saying that was an attempt to get King to stay. You know, they said, hey, we're going to put some faith in you here. The tag straps, we want you to get a nice run with these. You know, and you look at a good tag title run and what it can do for a tag team. The Kings of Wrestling got signed by WWE after their, like, year-long ROH tag title run, and they had a great run in that company. So you look at what's going on with this Kenny King situation, and you go, you know what? That's fine. You had the handshake agreement. They thought they were chill. I'm sure, you know, they were booking out A&X feuds and all that and thinking this is going to be awesome. And King comes up and says, hey, I'm going to wrestle for TNA. I'll see you guys later. I really do feel for Ring of Honor in this situation. But there is a right way and a wrong way to handle things. And the right way to handle things for Ring of Honor is to go, hey, you know what? We had a guy jump ship to TNA. We don't think that was a good choice. Tag titles, we're going to do this. You know, that's all that really matters is what happens to the tag titles. ROH instead decides to put out this long statement on their website saying, you know, Kenny King abandoned the company and Kenny King acted unprofessionally and Ring of Honor is not going to do business with Kenny King anymore. Well, no crap, Sherlock. Of course you're not going to do business with him anymore. He's going to go to TNA and get paid. What are you standing in his way for? Ring of Honor that has had to scale down their summer touring schedule, that isn't making the dates, you know. They were doing a small touring schedule, and that got even smaller because Ring of Honor isn't going to the Carolinas anymore. Because they couldn't sell tickets in the Carolinas. I mean, and this is a company with national TV that covers the Carolinas. It shouldn't be hard to get more than 500 people in a building, but Ring of Honor, for some reason, can't seem to do it. And you're worried about talent jumping ship when they're not under contract? And not only are you worried about that, but then you're going to put out a statement on that, accusing the talent of this stuff, and it's, if I may say so myself, it's douchey on Ring of Honor's part to do this. It's rude. It's not okay. It's one thing just to go, hey, we don't agree with what Kenny King did. We think that was a pretty messed up thing, and we're upset by it. Even that is fine, but to put on, you know, a full statement, and, I mean, there's, you know, one section, I think there's one section of people listening to this going, well, hey, they were honest with their audience. That's, you know, that's something that ECW did back in the day and all this. Yeah, that's fine. ECW also, you know, when guys went to make more money, seemed pretty chill with it. I think even Ring of Honor could have said, you know, could have called King and went, hey, we're kind of upset about this. Can you come in and maybe do a TV taping, do the iPay-per-view in September to drop the titles? You know, let us build up a feud on TV and then let us get it onto iPay-per-view so you can drop the belts. And Kenny King probably would have gone, yeah, if you guys are chill with me working here in the meantime. Ring of Honor could have said yes and they could have come to an agreement. And then, you know, you don't have that vacant whatever hole in your tag team title legacy. And because those things do add up. You look at the lineage of a championship. I look at them online on occasion because I'm a nerd. And every time you see vacated, it's just disappointing. So, basically, Ring of Honor has handled things really poorly. I'm not saying that what King did was completely right. Because, you know, when you've got a handshake agreement with someone, you honor that. That's, you know, that's part of your credibility as a person. But honestly, Kenny King can probably make more money with TNA. And even if he doesn't, even if he's just in for a show or two, well, you know what? Then Kenny King is also going to make a little bit more on the indie scene because 2 million people saw him on Impact and he made a good impression. 2 million people. That's more than we'll ever see an ROH event. Let's be real. Yeah. It's also just another sign of the decline of ROH, and that's depressing. So, King's promo was good, by the way. It was fun. I think King could be a great guy. We saw footage from last week of Aries talking to cameras while riding a bike. Basically, this was a package to build up Aries for Destination X. He talked about, hey, I'm not that big of a dude, but I've got a lot of heart, I'm dedicated, and I win a lot of matches. You know, I came in last year, and I've won a lot of matches with my Brain Buster. That's what we do here. Backstage, Austin Aries ran into Kenny King. And they hugged, and King said it was an honor to fill, it'll be an honor to fill the big shoes that Aries left for him. And the camera guy asked if Aries still intends to relinquish the title. Aries questioned what he meant and said he was going to do it by 10 o'clock. Aries was walking around with the belt, and I think part of the story that they're going with here is that Aries has a little bit of separation anxiety. Which he should. He fought hard, worked hard for that title. that's some continuity there that TNA doesn't always give us, or that anyone doesn't. Then we got the leaderboard, the scoreboard for the Bound for Glory series, and James Storm came out to his awesome, phenomenal F you, Chris Shore, if you don't like it, entrance music. And Jeff Hardy came out to his craptastic, written by Jeff Hardy, entrance music, why does Jeff Hardy have a band? And we got our fifth match of the night, James Storm versus Jeff Hardy in a Bound for Glory series match. The first 5 minutes of this match were super slow. It was a lot of stalling, a lot of each guy just kind of hanging out and doing their thing. A lot of going outside the ring. I mean, it was the Larry Zbyszko classic right there. Just let's wait. So for the first 5 minutes, I'm watching this thing going, oh, we're going to get a draw. This is totally going to be a draw. That is absolutely what is happening. I've also learned to stop predicting wrestling on Twitter because I tend to predict the wrong thing. Like when I thought that the Lucha Nexus was going to interrupt the Dixie Carter and AJ Styles announcement. Still a better choice, by the way, than Crack Horse Lair. But obviously, Crack Horse Lair made her appearance and not the Lucha Nexus. Lucha Nexus. What if it was, like, what if it was all the dudes from, you know, NXT seasons 1, 2, and 4 that got fired, that have been fired? I mean, you've got, like, Michael Tarver out there, like, Lucha Nexus, yeah. Is Michael Tarver the only guy from NXT season 1 that's been fired? Hold on. I'm going to try to run this down. Daniel Bryan, obviously still there. Wade Barrett's still around. Heath Slater, Justin Gabriel, still around. Darren Young, still around. That's five. Wow. David Otunga, totally still around. Oh, man. Just missing one more here. Who is it? Michael Tarver, obviously fired. We're missing one dude here, people. I'm trying to remember it. I'm going to look it up on the interweb right now. That's what I'm going to do. Because, you know, if it's just Michael Tarver showing up, that's going to be... That's not going to work. But I think it was a little more than Michael Tarver. Wait for it. Wait for it. Here we go. Here we go. Justin Gabriel, Heath Slater, Darian, Skip Sheffield, that's what it was. Someone was just yelling at their cell phone as they drove around going, it's Ryback, you dumbass! Ryback! Yeah, I'm a dumbass, and it was Ryback. So that would just be Michael Tarver. Let's see how we went with season two. Cabal could show up. I love chanting Cabal at indie shows that low-key works. It's rude. Percy Watson, I don't know if he still is a thing. Lucky Cannon, oh man, this stable's getting awesome. Eli Cottonwood, gotta have some muscle. All right, let's see if we can get some season four homies up there. I think all of these people are still employed. Maybe Jacob Novak. That dude was such a D-bag. Yeah, then we had NXT Redemption, which made no sense. Lucky Cannon was on that show, and Jacob Novak. Who watched this? Anyways, I don't know how I got off on an NXT rant. Lucha Nexus, that is how. Anyways, so I predicted that this would end in a draw on the Twitter, and I threatened to drink my beer if it did. And damn it, I had to drink my beer. Because this match did not end in a draw. Jeff Hardy won the match in about 14 minutes after... I think it was the twist of fate. I was expecting a kick out there, and this was a really good match. Once it got going, the crowd was into it. The wrestlers were really working hard towards the end. I don't know why why guys in the shape that Hardy and Storm are in need to stall for the first 5 minutes of a 15-minute match. They can go 20, 30 in the ring on a nightly basis. I don't know why they were stalling for that, but I'm sure the story will be told easily. Jason Powell thinks that they're going to be in the Final Four together. I still don't have Hardy in my Final Four. I'm sticking with Joe, Angle, Storm, and Magnus. Even though, man, where has Magnus been? I miss that guy. I like Brutus Magnus. Storm, he was going for his super kick, missed it. Jeff Hardy hit the twist of fate, 1-2-3-Zs, and Hardy wins. So they need to get Storm in a little more competitive of a place point-wise. And I think Hardy's one of the few guys in the contest that you can have him really lose to. I think there's a few guys in the Bound for Glory series that you can have him wrestle to a draw with, but there aren't a lot of guys that you can have him lose to in the series, and Hardy has to be one of them. And I think in a way, the wrestlers that James Storm takes a loss to, those are the wrestlers he needs to meet in the Final Four to revenge those losses. Boom. Go from No Surrender to Bound for Glory. It's James Storm's time. And I still believe that that's where they're going. As much as I think Austin Aries has shown that he can be a main eventer and deserves a world title reign soon, I don't think 2012 is the year of Austin Aries at all. I think 2013, they may use the Bound for Glory series, but I would say even if he stays as hot as he is right now through the rest of the year, if they're able to find a couple feuds to put him into that really impress people and really excite people, man, I think there's so much that can be done with Austin Aries. By the way, I predicted Aries versus AJ Styles as my Destination X main event. How am I so dumb, you guys? I don't get it. I know some people that listen to this and just really dislike me, but for some reason they still listen to the audio. They exist, people. They email me all the time. They're going, yeah, how are you so dumb, Will? Douche. I agree with you. yeah. Then we saw highlights of Angle versus Joe. The first Angle, when they first started hanging out together in 2006. Cheap plug here. If you want to, if you're in a podcast mood, and you are, if you're listening to this, and you want to listen to a really good podcast, I was on it, but on Kurt Angle versus Samoa Joe, on the Wrestlespective podcast, I made an appearance, and we talked for a little over an hour about Angle versus Joe from Genesis 2006, Kurt Angle's second TNA match, his first encounter with Samoa Joe, and I'm really proud of how that podcast turned out, and I think Jason Mann, the host of Wrestlespective, and I really, we had some fun discussing that event and offering some insight and a little bit of a background on that match and what was going on at the time. So if you're in a podcast mood as you get ready for Angle versus Joe this weekend, check out the Wrestlespective podcast. Just search Wrestlespective on iTunes. You know, it's Wrestle and then Spective, like perspective, and check it out. But yeah, then we had a shot of Hulk Hogan walking backstage, and then the announcers discussed the fact that Bound for Glory was going to be in Phoenix, Arizona this next year. That's cool. You know, it's a market they haven't been to. WrestleMania was there a couple years back. Phoenix is an okay town. I may actually try and make it out to Phoenix for that. If TNA's product stays this good, and if I have it off work, you know, there's like 17 things that are, hey, maybe I'll be there if this, and this happen. But it's possible that I will drive out to Phoenix for the event. If you're from Orange County and want to carpool out to Phoenix with me, give me a call. Give me an email, and don't be a serial killer. That's what I'll say. Actually, no, I would probably drive out alone. I enjoy solitary and not being serial killed. So there's that. Then we saw a little video package of Kurt Angle and Mr. Anderson talking about their Bound for Glory series match next week. Cool. They made a tiny little video package for next week. Nice work, TNA. This company, they're doing so many things right. The announcers hyped everything for next week. That Bound for Glory series match, Bully Ray versus Joseph Park, and Tess Mocker versus Gail Kim. TNA is doing a really nice job every week of promoting the next week's show. We talk about it with WWE a lot, where there's no hook. I finish watching Raw sometimes, and I go, well, that was cute. What am I supposed to watch for next week? What am I supposed to watch for on Friday night on SmackDown? Like, none of that. And TNA is doing a really nice job of hooking you into, this is this week's show, this is next week's, this is what's going on. You know, and the hype is paying off, I think, even if it's not in ratings. It's paying off in show quality, making it more exciting, making it more of a show that I want to watch on a weekly basis. So then Hulk Hogan walked to the ring with a pretty decent ovation, and he pointed it to his watch while the recappers announced the dead man's hand thing, and you know, they tied it into the attacker's own sting. Hogan asked for Austin Aries to come out, and Bobby Roode came out instead, and he said, "I thought I told you before." And Hogan said, "I thought I told you before Shut up, I'm talking. Oh, wait, Rude said that, sorry. Hogan talked again, only to have Rude interrupt him with, let me tell you something, brother. And Rude said he's the real champion. Basically, Rude was like, this is happening because of you. You drank that Aries Kool-Aid. You did, you know, you're on Austin Aries' side all the time, and I'm here to put a stop to it. And, he said that Aries' blood will be on Hogan's hands. Austin Aries came out, and, he started talking to, Bobby Rude. And, he said, Robert, Bobby, Bob, which I kind of liked. He said he can crash the party. He said he thinks Rude can crash the party and dictate how the show goes, maybe because he's the champion. But he said he should enjoy the last 3 days of being the champion, because he's going to win it. And the fans started a yes chant. Enough, Aries said. We got the point. Way to put a stop to that yes chant. Aries talked to, you know, did the three options, saying A, B, and C. And said C is Rude can remove himself from the ring. Aries took his jacket off on Sunday. Or wait. No, C was like, they fight, I think. Aries took his jacket off, took his shirt off, took the exhibition championship off, and Rude looked like he was going to leave, then turned around and tried to hit Aries with the world title. Aries ducked and came back and hit Rude with the exhibition title. The announcers, in one of the best calls, I think, of whoever said its career, went, X marks the spot. You guys, that was good. Yeah, basically, Aries hit him with the exhibition title and held up, and then picked up the world title and held up both titles, causing me to mark out for the double belt celebration, because I love those things. I love double belt celebrations, guys. They rock. And then he handed over the exhibition title, and Hogan raised Aries' hand as he held up the world title. Great final hype. Great stuff. Really basic stuff with Aries and Rude. Like, they didn't go the crack whore Claire route of a complicated storyline. They said, this is Austin Aries, this is Bobby Roode. Bobby Roode's a douche, so he's going to do this to Chris Sabin, and he's going to interrupt Hogan. Austin Aries is a pretty good guy, so he's going to do this, this, and this. The work that they did here went along with who the characters are. Consistency. That's what it is. It's consistency in TNA that is making this product so much better. And it really is. I think it shows. I look forward to watching Impact on Thursday nights these days. And this is one of the reasons why. Aries and Rude, they have a great thing going. This show itself, good. You know, I'm beginning to expect good from TNA. It feels weird. I feel kind of dirty. But no, I'm really beginning to expect good from TNA every time they come out of the blocks. And this is one of the reasons why. It's consistent. Even if one thing is bad on the show, there's going to be some good. And it's going to be more good than bad. I think that balance is changing so much. They've got a product that hooks you in for next week, hooks you in for the pay-per-view, and hooks you in for this week. They're really firing on all cylinders. And, as far as ratings goes, if anyone from TNA is listening to this, I honestly look back at the Monday Night Wars. WWE, in the year 1997, I think 97 was probably the best year creatively in the history of Monday Night Raw. They were putting on killer angles. They lost for the entire... They lost the ratings war for the entire year of 1997. What else is there to say? You know, and they're not... TNA is not in a ratings war. TNA does not have to... Or WWE does not have to lose for TNA to win. They're on separate nights. Yeah, they... You know, it's the same type of product, and maybe pay-per-view-wise... Hey, if I buy a WWE pay-per-view this month, I'm not going to get that TNA one. It's a little too much cash. And in that way, they are, you know, they're in competition, but they're also in competition with UFC and everyone else. You know, they're in competition with the fact that I want to go out to dinner tonight. You know, that's what TNA is in competition with, just as much as they're in competition with WWE and everything else. I think that TNA, they're winning right now because their product is creatively good. I don't care about the ratings as much. I don't care about other things. I care about the fact that TNA is putting on a product that I can watch and be proud of as a wrestling fan. I talk a lot about how TNA embarrasses me sometimes. You know, you even tell friends, yeah, I watched this TNA show. TNA? What the hell is that? No, but I would, if I had to take a friend and show them a wrestling TV show from the last month, I would show them that damn near perfect edition of TNA Impact from a couple weeks ago. The one after Slammiversary? Yeah. I would show them that one. And not, and, you know, if I had to show him one, a TV show from the last 4 or 5 months, I would show him that one and not many of the episodes of Raw lately. That's how strongly I feel about this product. I think the TNA is on the upswing. They're doing so many things right now that it's really stunning to watch, and I'm really happy that this product is doing as well as it is. So there's that. What do you guys say we get into some Destination X predictions? This one's a little harder because of that whole tournament thing. So, you know, if I get one pick wrong and get it wrong multiple times, you've got some issues. But let's see if TNA has some brackets on there. Let's check out that full card right now. Yep, they just have a... So, you get a last chance four-way. Dakota Darso versus Rubix versus Lars Only versus Mason Andrews for the last slot in the X Division title tournament. Rubix or Mason Andrews are my pick. Mason Andrews is a Scorpio Sky from PWG and NWA Hollywood and other indies. Personally, I go Rubix, who is Jigsaw, on this one. I think he's got a really great look, and he's an exciting wrestler. I think he put on the best match out of the people in this tournament. Rubix versus Sanjay Dutt was the best match in this tournament, not that. But I'll pick four, I guess. Let's see. Details on the X Division tournament. Click here. Going for it. Yeah, they don't have brackets released. So I'm just going to guess the Ultimate X match right now. I'll go Douglas Williams in there. Zema Ion in there, Kenny King, and Sanjay Dutt as the guys that go to the X Division Championship 4-Way Ultimate X match. And out of those, I think Kenny King gets close, but Zema Ion or Sanjay Dutt come out the winners. And I'm chill with either of those guys, actually. I think that both of them could, you know, be really good. But, you know, you look at that talent roster, and maybe you put Jigsaw in there instead of Zema Ion if they're not in the mood to push him. In fact, I don't go Douglas Williams on this one. Now that I think about it, I go Zema Ion, Jigsaw, Sanjay Dutt, and Kenny King. That's my pick. I'm probably wrong. I'm wrong a lot, but I'll have some fun with this one. And I go Zema Ion or Sanjay Dutt to capture the X Division Championship. I think you put it on a heel like Zema Ion, and you have guys chasing. You let them build some momentum. You give a big moment. And you make the X Division matter again. And I think with these 8, 11, you know, with these guys, you've got a great roster here, X Division-wise. You just got to use it and get rid of Flip Casanova, or as I like to call him, I'm about to injure you guy. Because, like, his theme music should be like Rob Van Dam's, only, you're going to get your face broken! I'm going to hit you really hard! Yeah. I don't like Flip Casanova. Nuts, if you didn't get that from this audio, I am stunned. That was one of the worst matches I think I've ever seen on Impact. So anyways, the Bound for Glory series match, Kurt Angle versus Samoa Joe. You know, I think Joe might win it. Joe is pretty high up there in the series, so it wouldn't shock me to see him take a loss here. And if Joe and Angle if their history is any indication... In all of the matches they've had together, Joe's won 2, and Angle's won, like, 2,000. Ugh. Again, if you want to hear me talk about that more, check out that Wrestlespective podcast on Genesis 2006 from a week or two ago. But, I'm going to pick Samoa Joe, even though I think Kurt Angle wins it. I'm going with my heart and not my my head here. Last Man Standing match, AJ Styles versus Christopher Daniels. Last Man Standing matches. The most exciting thing that happens in this match is the referee stands around and counts to 10. These things suck. I'll go ahead and pick AJ Styles to win that one, because that's just what happens. Yeah, and like, again, it's kind of like Joe and Angle. In like 27,000 AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels matches, AJ's won 26,998 of them. Finally... We've got Austin Aries versus Bobby Roode for the TNA World Championship. And I'm going to pick Bobby Roode to win this one. But I think they find a way to set up a rematch next month. I think there's enough heat on this program. There's enough fan interest in this program that they can definitely pull another month out of Aries and Roode. So That's something I'm really looking forward to, actually, is that match, because this is kind of Rude's, or Aries' coming out party. I think it's a match that Rude can look really good in and, like, a huge D-bag in, which is what he needs to do as a heel. So, that's going to do it for me, folks. Those are my predictions for Destination X. This has been your TNA Impact Wrestling audio review for the pre-Destination X episode this week on .net. Check out Ryan Kessler's live coverage of Silva Sonnen 2. The UFC event on Saturday night, that's going to be a big one. Check back on Sunday night if you are a .NET member for, just check the website for live coverage of Destination X. Plus, if you're a member, check back for that members exclusive Destination X audio review that Jason Powell will be doing. That's basically it, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you very much for your support of the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. Again, check out that member site. It's totally, totally awesome. Like, you're gonna approve of it in a big, big way. Thank you for listening, and for Will Pruitt, this is me signing off. Peace.